Hi, I'm Dan Fernandez of Channel 9, and we are here with some of the devs on Photosynth. So why don't you all introduce yourselves?
I'm Drew Steedley. I'm working on the synther for Photosynth, the thing that actually creates the Photosynth.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Joshua Podolak, and I work on the viewer. That's the part, the user affordances and all the UX and navigating between pictures.
So those are the two pieces that make up a Photosynth. Why don't we start, I guess, with the synther. So we had another conversation with Blase how it actually works, and you had mentioned some of the deep things you're doing for multi-processing. So mm-hmm. So why don't you go into some of the challenges that you face there?
Okay, so there's kind of three different stages when you're generating a Photosynth. You know, you extract features from each one of the images, and there's a blob detector that runs on the images and finds little 2D points that you think are unique and repeatable, and maybe you can find another image.
Mm-hmm.
And then we find a little descriptor that tells us a signature about what this looks like. We do this in all of the images, and then we go and try to match the signatures between images.
Right.
And so then if we have them matched, well, we think maybe we can find the 3D point that corresponds to and infer the camera position. So there's three main steps that occur. It's this feature extraction and the matching, and then finally the inferring of the camera and 3D point positions from those.
And in terms of each one of those, is one of them, I guess, easier? Or where are you spending, like, are you spending 80% of your engineering time finding things on a 3D plane, or how does that work?
So they're all kind of interesting problems in themselves. And there was a lot of work out of Microsoft Research recently on feature extraction and doing a good job of finding these feature extractions. So we were able to leverage a lot of their work
mm-hmm.
To do the feature extraction in Photosynth. And some of the people in Microsoft should be familiar with the image stitcher, which stitches Panorama.
Right.
And so this is using a lot of the same feature technology that's in there as well. And so we've multi-threaded that as well. So, you know, if you have a multi-core machine, the feature extraction process is going to be multi-threaded.
And this is C++. Are you using any of the parallel libraries, or did you all roll your own parallelism?
No,
or?
We use a lot of OpenMP.
Okay.
So we have Vadim on our team is very good at the parallelization. He went through and parallelized a lot of these things. And using OpenMP, it was not bad to do.
And do you have maybe just before or after performance numbers when you actually did everything in parallel? Or just off the top of your head, you would guesstimate?
Well, so for the feature extraction, it's, you know, if you're running on an 8-core machine, you get pretty good, pretty close to 8x, you know, speed up. For the matching, you know, for 4-core, dual-core, 8-core type machines, we're getting pretty close to 100% utilization as well.
Wow.
The inference of the camera positions, the point positions, is not multi-threaded yet, but, you know, we're working on that. It's a little more complicated to multi-thread.
So what are the challenges that you're facing there for just parallelizing that?
So it's one of the problems is that we use a kind of a very sequential type operation, and then the core routine is a big sparse matrix solve, and so that is very tricky to parallel. I mean, so the feature extraction is embarrassingly parallel because each image is processed completely independently.
Sure.
So we just throw each image onto a different core, and they all get processed. The matching, well, I want to match this image versus, you know, against the database of other images, and so all of those, it's equally embarrassingly parallel. But the optimization, well, you have to kind of build this reconstruction up, and so we've not done as much parallelization there. You know, doing a big sparse solve is not something that's as embarrassingly parallel. There are ways to do it.
All right, so assuming I'm an idiot, which is an easy thing, you said sparse solve. So what are you talking about there? Break it down for us slow folks.
So the way the optimization works is you get kind of an initial guess as to where the camera positions are and where the point positions are, and then you go check it. And the way you check it is you project the point back into the camera and you say, well, I found this blob here in the image, and when I reproject it, I find it here. So now, if I were to twiddle everything around, what do I need to do to make everything line up better? How do I move this reprojected point closer to where I thought I found it? So then you have to... So there's a sparse nonlinear solver. It is basically something that treats all of these as springs and lets them relax to their rest position. And so that's a big numeric optimization problem.
Okay.
And so that is a sparse solving.
Okay. And in terms of, I mean, how big are the, like what are the biggest things and what are some of the smallest, what are your sort of like test cases where hey, here's the way we can optimize, or here are the things where our code, you know, is really going to do well when we have tons of images in similar environments, or is it better to have different, and what are some of the ways you go around synthing, because, again, we're talking about photos that could be from day, night, from different locations, different quality. How do you go about even testing that any of this can work?
So it's actually a tough problem, because, you know, if you want to synth, you know, 1,000 photos, and how do you know if you're right? Right. It's an excruciating thing to go manually check these things. So we developed an entire evaluation platform for this, where we can track how things changed over different builds. So we don't have kind of one number that says, this synth got a, you know, 52.6 score.
Mm-hmm.
But we have a lot of different little metrics which we look at, and these diagnostics that pop out and we check against. And so we have a bunch of things that we see are important, and we run, you know, we have an entire cluster of machines in Live Labs where we can take a new build, kick off, you know, a couple dozen photosense collections and generate reconstructions of them and get all this diagnostic data back out, and then go quickly look and see what all has changed and see, did we get fewer features? You know, for instance, we, at one point, the compression rate for the multi-resolution, we convert the images into this tiled format and upload them ahead of time, and the compression rate on those was changed, which changed the feature extraction, and so suddenly we noticed that in general the performance was getting worse, and it was very easy to kind of go track down exactly where things had changed and understand what the culprit was and understand the problem.
So for some of those, you can actually measure, you know, say, performance. You can see that there's performance degradation. But, I mean, for some of them, you really are looking at the synth and seeing if there is quality. So there is...
Yeah, so we
haven't eliminated the humans yet. Is that a...
yeah, unfortunately, it's very tricky. I mean, you can measure the time, right? We have these performance meters where we, you know, for each synth that runs on the cluster, we see how much memory it's using over time, and we see how much time each piece of the reconstruction took, the feature extraction, the image conversion, the matching, and the point and camera inference. So we can see how long those takes, and those are very kind of easy things to quantify, but how good does a synth look is kind of ambiguous.
Right.
So that, you know, we have all of these different metrics that we try to, you know, how connected are these cameras, how many jumps would I have to get through, you know, for different points, to get from one image to another. These kind of just a bunch of small, you know, suboptimal little metrics that we have on the sense in total give us a pretty good view of what's happening. We don't have one single number, but we can tell when something's changed, and we can go find, you know, where it's changed.
Okay. So now one of the obvious things is now you have a synth and now you need to actually see it. So how do you all work together? Because certainly there are different problems, but how did you all sort of exchange data and sort of drive dependencies or changes into each other where, hey, I actually need more data as it relates to, say, the end of a stitch or when you're navigating between images versus less data? So how's that all work, or you all just send each other emails? Or
it started off that way. So the synther has been around for a while, and they've been improving the quality of the synths and the data for quite a bit. And then what happened was is, based on Sea Dragon technology to allow you very smooth zooming, we started rebuilding the entire view from scratch. And so for a while there, it was just, let's make some synthetic data and see what it looks like on top. And then at one point, we had it working well enough that we wanted to start pulling the two things together. And so there was some old text spec where everything was stored, you know, in ASCII format, and then Vadim and I kind of got together and rewrote what we felt the major data was that needed to be passed on, and that was rebuilt, and took us a while to kind of get the thing going back and forth. A later improvement that came around was we started using JSON for storing all the metadata. And
is that JavaScript object notation? Or?
Yep.
Okay.
That is
just making sure it's the right JSON.
It's the right JSON. Yeah, we don't have a guy named Jason on the team. Blaze actually was the one who really, really forcefully suggested using it, and it's proven to be very, very very, very useful because you can just add in extra fields, extra data that might be useful. I think you just added some extra information about the camera and about the radial distortion.
Yeah, so we started estimating radial distortion parameters for the camera, and we wanted to add these in, and previously the viewer wasn't taking advantage of these, but we want to in the future, and so we're going to start storing these in the JSON file.
So you have the metadata, and now are you actually serializing C++ or I guess the metadata about photos into JSON objects, or how exactly does that, I guess, interchange work?
Yes, it's so I guess kind of stepping back a little bit, there's an entire navigation library mm-hmm. where on the sensor side of things, we don't necessarily know. We didn't want to be kind of in the loop trying to stop, being in the way of them doing fast iterations on changing navigational affordances and generating all this JSON data. Mm-hmm. So one of the things, that kind of an architectural change that we made, was to take the generation of all the navigation data, like who are my neighbors and what plane should this image be projected on. We pulled that out, and the viewer team took over ownership of that, and we're able to embed that inside of their viewer for quick on-the-fly debugging.
Sure.
And then also pass it back to us. And so then they also took ownership of converting it all to this JSON format.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of an architectural decision that worked out really well for kind of eliminating all of this talking back and forth between us that was getting in the way of development.
So would you say you're more loosely coupled or tightly coupled these days, or?
Well, we link against their library, but okay. In that sense, we don't have to be in the loop when they make changes, which is nice.
Okay.
So it compiles inside of the center's code, but we don't have to know about it, and they can make the changes that they want to see on their end show up for them.
Yeah, so they sort of own their changes, or for lack of a better word.
So it decreases the coupling between us, which is nice. It makes testing a lot easier.
That's a good thing, and if nothing else, we can just say it, even if it's not true. So, so the viewer,
mm-hmm.
How do you go about actually making this possible? Like, obviously, you have some sort of dimensional points, and you want to create a user experience, and the audience is really consumers. So you're building consumer level experience where somebody's navigating photos or a synth. What are the challenges that you face, or what are the
yeah? So
how do you do it?
So there's a number of challenges here, and I'll start off with what Jude mentioned. What the center point returns is a point cloud, kind of a bunch of feature points in 3D space, and also where the cameras were that took those pictures that you see. And so the first question is kind of where do you put that picture? Do you put it up close to the camera? Do you kind of try and fit it to where the points are to make it look something like in 3D? And We do actually the latter option. We try and use Ransac to take the, you have an image and it sees certain points in the 3D space, and you try and fit it best so that the points best match up onto the onto
and
the
what's
picture.
What's Ransac?
Help me out here for
random
the
random sample.
What you do is you choose a random subset of the points, and you see what and you say, okay, this is a hypothesis for what the plane should be. You compare based on another random set of the points and see how far away they are, and see how, and then you rate how good that hypothesis was.
And that's all code that you all built, or was that something you could leverage from MSR?
So we've written a lot of different versions of Ransac. The Synthr uses a lot of it. So Ransac is a robust estimation technique. Like you have mm-hmm. you have a bunch of matches, but a lot of them are wrong. In the matches, and so you've got to find some answer for the camera where a lot of them agree and are tightly. Close to where they are projected to be,
mm-hmm.
but some of them can just be arbitrarily far off. And so this kind of voting scheme, it allows you to kind of sample the camera positions and say, okay, well, if I choose this subset of points and estimate the camera position, I get 52 points that agree. If I choose this one, I get 163 that agree. And so with the plane fitting, it's kind of one of the similar things. Well, if I take these 3 points to estimate the plane position, well, then a lot of the other points agree.
Mm-hmm.
So we've written a lot of different versions of these robust estimations.
And we've gone back and forth a little bit on how constrained do we want those planes. So should the plane, for example, always be perpendicular to the view direction and only keep a certain distance, or do you want the up direction to be in some consistent or something like that? And we've gone back and forth exactly how to use that. So that's the first step. And then once you have where the pictures are, well, ultimately the person has to be navigating in this space. And so, okay, I'm at this camera, and now I want to go left. So which picture do I show? Right?
Right, right.
And so we've tried out various algorithms, and this is what was in that toolkit that was in originally in the synthesizer. We moved it over to the viewer in order to play with various algorithms and very easily converge on something that we felt was kind of optimal for choosing, yeah, what should be a left neighbor, what should be a right neighbor. If I show one picture, the one I'm focused on, it looks, you know, it's very nice in the middle, but you do want to show some of the other images as background, so give the person a context of what's going on. So again, mm-hmm. it's a kind of a question is what kind of which of all the, you know, 200 images that the person uploaded should be shown.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is one of the types of things you have to do.
And in terms of image navigation, right? So like once I do it, you had mentioned something before, springs. Is that in terms of I have two images and now I'm navigating, and how do I make that seem like a smooth, like I'm navigating in 3D even though everything is 2D? How do you do that?
Yeah, so that's kind of like almost the second part of what's going on is that, so now we have this entire environment, this world, and we know where if someone wanted to walk to the left, he needs to go in this direction. But it's still a matter of making it all look nice on the screen.
Right.
Because it's very much a user experience type thing. And so if someone wants to go to the left, I don't want to jump immediately to the picture to the left. Or if I start dragging on the screen and I want to move the pictures, if I'm zooming in or out, I don't want it to be too jerky. And so we have this whole framework of springs. We say where the target position, rotation, target zoom value of the screen should be. And the spring kind of continually pulls in that direction. And so every time you do any kind of mouse drag or any click on the button, we get pulled after that spring. And that gives us a slightly smoother path in this 7D space of, you know, what the camera look at, what the camera look look vector is and so on and so forth. In fact, we even do it for the world itself. So you have these pictures in 3D.
Mm-hmm.
But let's say you want to, we have a 2D mode, right? So you have this grid mode. You can see all the pictures in a single frame. And so you want them to smoothly maybe go from 3D to 2D, so let's put a spring on it and let's pull all these pictures. And you get this kind of very nice smooth-like effect. So that's one part of the you know, user experience at the end. The other part, of course, is being able to show all these images at high resolution
right.
as you move around.
In performance, so you're not getting, you know, please wait while image loads. Everything should just work.
Yes, and there we rely very much on C-Dragon technology. So Silverlight recently has something called Deep Zoom,
right.
which is based
right.
on exactly on that. And the notion is that, you know, you have pictures that have megapixels in size, but the screen, you know, I don't know, whatever, 1200 by 1000 or whatever. And so you don't need to show the entire resolution of all the pictures at once. And so it's very much a, since the pictures are available on some server somewhere,
mm-hmm.
right? So it's a network thing. I'm trying to download just the correct textures that I need in order to show on the screen at this time and so on.
Yeah,
and so forth.
It's a just in time, if you will, depending on somebody low res when they're out, and then when they zoom, then you go to the.
Mm-hmm.
And I think some of the, do you all use that as well in the tiling? Because I know Deep Zoom was based on some of the tiling work. So I'm assuming you
it's
all
exactly
need to.
The same format. We take each image. The first thing we do is at the full resolution, break it up into, you know, like 256 by 256 tiles, 256
mm-hmm.
pixels by 256 pixels tiles, and then we go down, get a lower resolution, do the same thing, and generate a whole pyramid of files.
Okay.
That's actually the first step in the synther process is to generate all of these tiles and start streaming them up to the website, because the upload is one of the things that takes the longest amount of time. Typically, we've done
right.
synthing way before the upload's finished.
Oh,
so,
interesting.
So we start the multi-resolution conversion. That's also parallelized, and this is code that we got from the C-Dragon team. And then another little trick that we use to take advantage of the multi-resolution format is that in the feature extraction, we don't want to run at the full resolution all the time, because we get far too many features, so we actually go pick out the right resolution that we care about after the multi-resolution conversion's been done.
Interesting. Okay. So y'all are sort of doing the smart, easy way in terms of picking image resolution.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Cool. So viewer stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when originally you came out, and how long have you all been on the team? Have you all been since it started, or?
So I started on the original Photosynth team for the tech preview that came out. So I've been on the team for 2 years now.
Okay, and it's certainly seen some evolution, but where do you all see sort of the feedback? And this is one of the things you all were mentioning. You gave it to thousands of Microsofties, and you got, I think it was, what, a couple thousand?
Yeah, about three and a half thousand synths currently available on some of our local servers.
So we tend to be a vocal bunch. So how did you all go about actually doing the sort of the user experience and, you know, people want this feature or they want to be able to have this navigation just in terms of the way they're navigating in the viewer from all those folks? Or did you get that sort of feedback? Or
we got some of that. So it's kind of hard for people to say what they want. I mean, this type of technology really hasn't been out beforehand. And so when the tech preview came out, this was, you know, really the first, you know, first major type of 3D navigation, maybe the only, I think the only at the time, 3D navigation type of system. And so, tried a whole bunch of different things, putting up quads to be able to, you know, there's some image in the background you want to click on and go to it instead. There was a little bar on the bottom that allowed you to maybe show interesting images, and you could click on any one of those to go to. There was a Squiwirl, some 2D version where you could see images that kind of looked the same in some sort of square spiral mode.
Interesting.
And basically people were saying, well, I like that, I don't like that. This one, you know, it's nice at first, but then I get tired of it.
Right.
And that kind of feedback came back, and so then we tried.
Feedback was very much, I don't like this. You know, it's not kind of, you know, you need an object navigation or some sort of, you know, whatever, right? So that, you know, they had to come up with some sort of way to solve this problem, which was, you know, from this feedback of, I don't like the way this navigation performance works here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so, yeah. Or another good example of things is you have some sort of 3D, you know, you have an environment. Someone made a synth, a collection of images that he's uploaded. And, well, I can navigate here, but I want to get to there from here, and I can't get there easily. So something's, right? Something's wrong with the way maybe you've generated the neighbors. And so you take a bunch of these things, and you try and kind of draw a line through all the points that people say yes or no, and that's kind of what we come up with. We've been trying new things all the time. So one new type of navigation affordance we've been playing with and it seems to be pretty successful is a torus.
So what is a torus?
So the basic photosynth is, you know, you have an environment, you're taking pictures all around, and you want to be able to walk through it. One type of either an environment in its own or as part of a regular environment is, let's say, some object of interest in the scene. Maybe it's a statue that you've taken around, or maybe all you care about is a close-up of some object, and you just take pictures all around it. Mm-hmm. And so you can identify this because the pictures are all kind of facing at a single point. They're all looking at a single thing, and they're kind of, usually they're around that thing. And so we get a very nice point cloud because we've been getting ever better point clouds from these things. And someone pointed out, hey, I want to be able to look at this and kind of grab it in my hand and rotate it around from all directions and look at it.
Right.
And so we added this, based on this, you know, feedback, we added an extra affordance where if we identify such an object, and this is one of these things that will compute, we originally were computing on the viewer side, but we realized that this type of computation really should be on the synth so that, you know.
And you have to redo it every single time somebody downloads it.
Right.
Be done once and uploaded.
And so we store some extra metadata saying an object exists at this position and these are the pictures that are associated with it. And so then when we identify one of these things, you can now have, it draws a little torus, a little halo on the screen, and you can grab on it, click on it, and rotate, you know, in that direction.
So that's, the torus is sort of the visual cue that this is something that you can really go deep into, if you will, in terms of looking at the object.
Yes.
Interesting. Cool. So one of the other things I was going to ask you is probably the hardest question, which is, what was the hardest thing that you all had to do? So obviously, you all have been working from a CTP, then there's the betas. What is the thing where somebody said, we have to add X, and you're like, there's no way we are possibly... What was the thing that really sort of hurt or was the toughest?
In the synth era, I don't know if there's any kind of one thing. It just had to be robust, right? And just it's like 1,000 small different things that we had to add, and, you know, checks at the end, checks in the beginning, little discriminative tests to say, yes,
right.
You know, you can get matches between any two images, and sometimes you want to say, no, I don't trust this match, and tuning all those knobs, and just a thousand things just eventually build up to where you actually have something that's robust and that you're willing to hand off to the users. And that's substantially different than something that you can, you know, you can generate for an academic paper or for a CDP, right? You know, these things you only have to make work a couple times, but when you actually have to hand it off to people and it has to work and it's one of these big hairy problems, that's scary, right? And that's
so let's quickly just talk about some of that, the robustness. How did you get to a level of robustness where you can sleep at night? Like what are the number of scenarios? Are you testing, you know, different monitors in terms of the experience, different hardware? Like,
so for the Synther, it's the hardware is you know, it's mainly about memory usage. One of the things, the kind of the scenarios that we had to kind of feel our way around is what type of photos do people take and when does it fail, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There are things like people will take panoramas where there's no parallax, you know, and we have a panorama stitcher out from Microsoft Research where, you know, they tell people, well, if you really want a good panorama, put it on a tripod and rotate it around.
Sure.
Don't have any parallax so you don't get these ghosting artifacts.
Right.
Whereas with Photosynth, you have to have parallax. And it seemed like when we worked on the Stitcher, it seemed like everybody moved and they always had these ghosting effects. That was the biggest problem. And it seemed like when we were working on Photosynth, the hardest problem was that nobody moved the camera, right? They would do this, and there's this kind of this sweet spot where people just kind of move, you know, they stand in one place and they move the camera around.
Right.
And when we did the initial internal release back a year and a quarter ago, year and a half ago, we found that everybody was getting, you know, were getting these kind of results, and it was very dissatisfying because they would just say, okay, you know, I can't do anything with this. So mm-hmm. we had to add in support for that. And we found that people would take things, they wouldn't line up, you know, they wouldn't match together. And so right now, in the sense that come out, you throw in a collection of images, and we break it up into the components, which we believe actually are tightly coupled things where we can represent this and you can navigate between them. And we cut apart places where we don't believe that you can, right? So we have these multiple overlapping synths. You know, we also
wow.
have to estimate what direction is up. Which, you know, so that this is one of those kind of subtle issues that you don't think should be hard, but is surprisingly difficult.
Yeah, I'm sure even for things like it, when people start building synths underwater or something, where who knows how you're gonna. Well, I'm probably making more work for you. So I'll ask you the same question. The hardest thing that you found so far.
I think it was dealing with the multiple synth thing. We're still, we pretty much solved. So what happens is that the synther finds, you upload a collection of images, right, 100 images, and yeah, it so happens that, for example, what happens if you uploaded 50 images from this room and mm-hmm. then 50 images from, you know, some garden somewhere outside? So obviously there's no way to connect the two.
Mm-hmm.
And so what the synther does is it generates, you know, one cluster optimally of all 50 in one and another one with the other. And you upload them all at once, so it's got to be in the same collection, so we have a little thing that says, okay, jump to the next set of images. But sometimes there's a very loose collection between two sets. So let's say it was one room and then a bunch of images from the next room over, and maybe the door was open so you can actually see between the rooms. Okay, so if there's enough images to get it all together, then it'll all be one single coordinate system and everything will be fine. But
right.
as Drew alluded earlier, sometimes it's not enough. And so you see that image, and we can tell you that what it's looking at in the other room, but there's no real 3D connection between the two. They're in different 3D coordinate systems. And so you'd really like to be able to navigate between the two anyway. It's one of those questions. Is I have this room here. Why can't I go into that room? Well, trying to explain that there's not quite enough images walking through the doorway, right? So
right.
if you're on one side of the doorway, you only see the door, and as soon as you walk through, you don't see that anymore. So those matches are not there.
So the synther will kind of say, well, I've got this tight clump here and this tight clump, and it would be really wobbly if I were to try to paste these together.
Right.
So what it does instead is it just kind of pulls them apart and says, well, there's a link here. And so then the viewer now has to be able to jump between, there are these portal images, where if you land on one of them, you can go into either. But we don't allow you to go to both synths from everywhere.
And so some of the future stuff would be at some point, you know, after working weekends, the idea of being able to stitch together different synths and sort of piece by piece knitting these different pieces together, if you will. Is that fair? And is that some of the challenges you all are facing now as sort of after this release?
That is probably the single major, the largest challenge we're going to have.
Yeah, everybody's uploading these synths, and so we're going to get, 50 copies of, Notre Dame or whatever, right? And so now we want to come up with some kind of coherent representation of this. Or maybe there are multiple overlapping synths, which people have uploaded, which, have some overlap. And so linking these together and finding these links with, the synther side of things and then navigating these links is definitely high on the priority list to come up with a solution to that.
Cool. All right. Well, thanks. I think we're officially out of time. But,
you get another 5 minutes if you want to do some more quick questions.
I'm trying to think. Is there anything else? Anything else we missed that you all think would be interesting for developers?
You didn't go on a whole lot about how you actually estimate the objects. That's kind of a very hairy thing that was,
estimating the objects.
So I guess at a high level, it's kind of, there are objects in the scene. Sometimes you're walking around an object, sometimes you're looking at it, creating a panorama. And they're like, Doom has one style of 3D navigation where you just kind of walk around.
Right.
Around. QTVR has a panorama mode, and it also has an object mode. But in PhotoSynth, you have a heterogeneous mix of these, and so
we actually have all of them.
And you have to know, the viewer has to know when to switch between these different affordances. And so you have to identify, well, here's an object. This torus should show up here and allow the user to move around here. Right? Or here, this is a panorama, so the user should be able to just drag and scrub around to jump from image to image. And then, otherwise there are these kind of forward and back kind of Doom-style navigation schemes. So I thought that was something that was very hard on the viewer side to solve.
It's complicated in the sense that we have this big table of, okay, I've clicked on this and I've done that, so now, but I previously clicked on this thing and I'm zoomed in at this level, so then what should I do now, right? So, if someone is zoomed in enough on a picture, then it's, the assumption is that he's trying to kind of just look at various details in the picture, so we only want to pan the image left and right. But if I want to rotate it, then what happens if the next picture is all of a sudden really small? So now, I do want to kind of navigate in the scene. Or what if, and so what we have is we have this big kind of state diagram, basically, that goes through, okay, you've done this, you've done that, now what the next, the next move should be.
Sure.
What is our prediction of, what does the person want to do?
Yeah, inferring the user intent.
Inferring the user intent is really, really complicated.
So do you all actually do that where you have, I'd say almost like a heat map, because everything is like a node of trees of navigation. Do you all have...
State machine.
Yeah, so like where you actually see, this is where the majority of users go in terms of navigation. Is it for specific synths, or you look at overall where you're recording, people went from here to here, and then they zoom into these specific objects?
We haven't done that yet, but that's one of the things in plan. We have some kind of very global view things, some heuristics, some rules, what a person might be interested in doing based on feedback we've gotten, but nothing that elaborate yet.
Okay. Yeah, because I have seen some, and this is probably a random example, but like where Halo did the same thing for their maps where they can actually see a visual representation of them navigating trees. So more homework, I'm sure, for you all to do. All right. Well, thanks again for your time. Thanks.
Thank you.